The number one resolution for people last year was to save more money, but nearly half gave up by February. Don't let that be you. Download Rocket Money to reach your financial goals this year. Track your spending, cut waste, and automate savings in one simple app. Rocket Money shows you all your expenses and categorizes them so you know exactly where your money's going and where you're overspending. From there, the app cuts waste by canceling your unused subscriptions and lowering your bills. No customer service needed. With that money freed up, the app will automatically set some cash aside for your goals, whether it's an emergency fund, paying off debt, or saving for vacation. Rocket Money's got you covered. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. And on average, users can save up to $740 a year when using all of the app's premium features. Make saving money a priority this year. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
You are listening to the NHRD podcast. NHRD, a national HRD network, India's largest network for HR professionals. This episode is brought to you by Zing HR.
Welcome to the NHRD podcast. I'm your host, Sheetal, and on episode 2, we've decided to take a closer look at a very historic thing that's happened in recent times, a government's move to consolidate over 29 labor laws into 4 definitive codes. And these codes are aimed at simplifying compliance, very important, and also enhancing worker welfare. Now, if you're thinking of this as, a regulatory change, then you're probably missing the point over here, because it's not really just that. It's actually a blueprint for a sustainable, fast-growing and future-ready India that has all the world's eyes on it as we speak. And we're going to be joined by 2 experts who are bringing their own individual domain expertise into the conversation. We have with us Mr. Prasad Rajappan, who is the founder of Zing HR, and they've been doing some transformative work in all that you see as cutting edge in HR today. We also have with us Dr. Israel Inbaraj. He's a veteran leader in HR and also compliance as a space, and has worked with several different organizations and helped shape their journeys in these 2 areas specifically. He's more than just that, but we will discover all of that in the course of today's conversation. And let me also point out to our viewers and listeners that our experts will help us unbox the transformative potential of the 4 new codes. And if you're asking what these 4 codes are, you shouldn't be asking, but I will recap that for you. Code on wages, industrial relations, social security and occupational safety, which cover minimum wages, union relations, benefits, workplace safety, very important for both the organized and unorganized sectors. So that's the scope of the transformation that we are going to discover on the NHRD podcast today. Welcome, Dr. Inbaraj and Prasad. Thank you so much for making us some time on the show today.
Thank you, Sheetal.
Thank you, Sheetal.
Yeah. And thanks, NHRD, for this.
Yeah, it's our pleasure entirely, because the idea is to arm the HR fraternity, professionals, our members, our institutional members as well, with all that they need to do to ensure the successful implementation of what's been prescribed to us. And, to set the context, a broader context for this conversation, India is arguably the most keenly observed player today on the world economy stage in many ways. So how do these 4 labor codes provide us that competitive edge that we need as a nation to sustain our fast-paced growth on the global stage? And how do they act as a foundational infrastructure for India to remain, and this is important, remain sustainable, high-growth economy.
Thank you, Sheetal. See, in India, if you look at the labor laws, it is all started from 1936 onwards. There are laws are there, and it's emerging. If you ask me, after 1970, there is no laws actually newly enacted except the POSH law, which is not a labor law also.
Right.
So what happens, compliance was considered as the compulsion. Most of the industry practices, people feel that compliance is on a compulsion.
Right.
Compliance is actually more about, you know, handling the inspector's process. But the new labor code is actually changing the landscape, I would say that, actually. And it's more expected in terms of the how can compliance be a part of function?
Right.
How can compliance become a culture of the organization? Mm-hmm. Such a way, the internal aspects of the new labor codes are giving an opportunity to bring the compliance as a culture of the organization, mm-hmm. and bring it, make it more global friendly.
Right.
Look at from the globalization perspective, how it can, the multinational companies can pitch in there and they can understand the law better, they can adhere to the law and move on actually. That way, this labor law is going to become, it's going to be a game changer in terms of the compliance in the country, and also the lifestyle of the people also is going to change, especially at the bottom level, I would say that.
Yeah. Interesting observation over there. Compliance as a culture, that's a phrase that I'm going to take away over here. And also, of course, for the betterment, at the end of the day, that's what we are aspiring to of employees. Prasad, you have an interesting take on this as well. I'd love to hear that.
See, I think India is now racing in one of the fastest growing economy. All the eyes the world has sent here. Foreign people, foreign investors looking to invest in India, continue to invest or increase the investment there. And while the ease of business was one, I think this was much awaited, saying how do I simplify labor laws. To my mind, as a non-HR professional, I see it as two parts. One is the organized sector, one is the unorganized sector. And in companies also, we had people who are like on roles, off roles, a lot of clarity not being there, what's the cost. And the off-role people also were seeing as something different. So one of the aspects of bringing them all them into almost like covering from the social welfare and the fair wages, I think is a very transformational move. And the good part is most of the HR people whom we've spoken are welcoming it. While they want a lot of clarity, I think this is going to be a reform through conviction, not for compulsion. It's a long way to go. And I think we as industry should welcome it, and I'm happy that the industry is welcoming it.
I think you've both spoken about, you've come at it from different perspectives, and I'm going to hold on to that thought and that you, Prasad, have brought up over here, which is that it is not about, it's more about conviction and not, you know, friction in many ways. And, Dr. Inbaraj, I've got to ask you this. NHRDN represents thousands of institutions, and we are clearly, you know, seeing a shift from this policing kind of compliance to an enabling kind of compliance, where people are aware of exactly why they need to do something. So from your vantage position as someone who straddles both spheres, right, HR and compliance, how does this consolidation of 29 laws into four codes enable organizations to focus more on people rather than this, you know, oh, let me get it right, let me not, check the right wrong box and so on and so forth. So how does one avoid administrative friction and focus on what's most important, humans?
See, if you look at the new labor codes, there is a strong emphasis for the digitization of the compliance process. The same registers, if you look at the old laws, same registers, same data need to be submitted in the various formats, need to be submitted to the various authorities again and again.
Right.
But here there is a clear provision available for the digitization of records. When you do a digitization of records, the government consolidation also easy in terms of the organization data collection for the budget preparation. Government also can easily do it. Employer also need not repeat that again and again. If you look at the registers alone, if you ask me, there are about 84 registers were there in the entire labor laws. 84 registers supposed to be maintained. Mm-hmm. Now it's becoming 8.
Right. Yeah.
And that is going to make a huge change, you know, in terms of the compliance requirements also, number of sections, number of provisions, number of registrations, number of licenses, everything is going to come down. So this is going to help the HR to focus more on transactional aspects can be digitized, and they can focus more on strategic functions. That's one key advantage takeaway from the new labor code I see. Also, you pointed out right thing, the inspectors, managing inspectors was one job. And the inspectors are expected to play the role of facilitators. And they are expected to play not only the inspector. The inspector role is actually second role. It is an elevated role. First level, all inspectors are expected to facilitate the compliance, because many times law is not democratized. Law is actually what happens, you know, unless the deep expertise is not there, people are not aware sometimes. So educating them, creating an awareness, giving an option for them to correct if there is a non-compliance, then repeated offense, go for a penal provisions. That way, graded type of the provisions are given to fix the compliance in place. And most importantly, what I like from the provisions of this law is always HR really, really struggle a lot. When you send a letter to the government, when will I get a reply? When will I get an approval? So those things are kind of uncertainty was there. But in the new code, there's a clear certainty is in place. When you submit the approval request, there is a timeline authority need to respond, either reject or approve. If not, it will be a deemed approval.
Okay.
Automatically, it will get approved. This is a major, major comfort is zone is going to come for the HR as well as for business because of this single provisions, if you look at it. Time-bound approval process is a major change also is going to make.
Yeah, it's an interesting point that you made, because elsewhere, I was just in a totally different context. Someone was telling me about some setting up a company somewhere else in some other geography. And this sort of deemed approval process really, I think, takes a load off a founder who has other, you know, a startup founder who has other issues to take care of and get to market as quickly as possible, you know, given how fast things are changing. So important one, deemed approval. I love the sound of that. But, you know, Prasad, I'm going to come to you because Zing HR, I mean, you've been at the forefront of digital transformation. So your views on this technology as an enabler will be particularly useful for, I think, our viewership over here. Do tell us how this legislative outcomation, I love the word, by the way, by the government, is going to use technology.
So I think if you see, while we are talking, we did a research with across various sectors, there are four main concerns coming, and I'll come to the last one of technology. First one was, how is the gratuity provision going to happen? What is the PF liability? How do I come link it to employees? And lastly, how do I going to change my systems? Like Dr. Anbara said, it's like the income tax today. And I think today government is only equipped with even AI to do the bring in transparency. So by default, government is saying, I trust you. Go ahead. By default, I'm trusting all employers, all entrepreneurs as fair and doing it. Yeah. And I've simplified the system. Having said that, I think like people like, for example, we have now launched something called Zero Touch Payroll. We are able to do a payroll on a real-time basis, on a daily basis, including gratuity leave encashment provisions. Now, see, from that, from an employee perspective, it's a full transparency. Employer know that they are compliant. The CEO or the board or the CFO knows with on a daily basis they are compliant. With this era, I think business is going to flourish. And technology, especially a lot of things on AI, in the background is going to play a role. Yeah. And we are happy to be, you know, leading that in that sense.
And at the time, for the viewers, at the time of recording this particular podcast with our speakers, I know for a fact that Prasad is at the AI Summit happening in New Delhi, where I think a lot of great ideas are going to come to the fore, and we're all looking forward to some of that information. But let me come back to you, Dr. Inbaraj, because you're also a certified POSH trainer. You worked in the DEI space, helping, you know, craft some of those frameworks for organizations. So I thought I've got to, I mean, I cannot not ask you this question, right? With respect to women's participation, how do you see these codes being leveraged to increase participation, especially with the new rules that have come in with respect to safety, night shifts, and so on?
Yep. See, the woman engagement, empowerment of women in this labor code is given a very, very big importance, starting with the concept-wise. Earlier, if you look at the law, they use the word workman. Hmm. Workman is completely a gender-specific. Even if there is a woman actually in place, we call them workman under the law. So now they are changing the word from workman to worker. That thought process itself makes a big shift in the process of whenever you are going to refer, you are going to use a gender neutral words. And also the new labor code, though there are Equal Remuneration Act, which talks about the women discrimination should not be there in terms of their hiring, in terms of the training, in terms of their promotion, in terms of their transfer and all. But in the new labor code talks about gender neutrality. No gender discrimination should not be given in terms of the any employment terms and conditions, either in hiring, no gender, including the transgender I'm talking about, not only about the male, female, it's including transgender. That's a major transition shift. And most importantly, you know, that Factories Act had a provision which now prohibits women working in night shifts. That case law was started with the woman who actually fought for it only in Madras High Court. That section was actually banned it. But across India, if you look at it, till the new labor code come in place, women engagement night shift, especially in factories, was prohibited. Except few states, they have given a special provision. But this law makes that every woman can be engaged throughout all 24 hours in all the process, subject to her consent. That's more important. It's not that because the people challenges at home, work-life balance to be taken care, social life, family life, considering that there is a clear mandate, women should accept it first. Consent for working night shift. When woman is willing to work in night shift, why are you stopping? So yes. That process, because you know, there are about industries like Tata Electronics, Ola, these companies are 100% women employment is coming up now. They're talking about. So these industries will definitely get benefited. So gender neutrality is given a very high importance here. And also the in terms of the payment of maternity benefits, they are saying actually you need to pay before actually, when the moment you get to know about the pregnancy itself, you should pay the initial payment advance, 2 months payments to them actually. Not only that, even after delivery, you should not wait for a 6 months to complete. Immediately after getting delivery notice, you are supposed to pay the payment to the women workers on that. Not only that, the crèche facility, earlier it was only for a factories act, if you look at it, only 30 women are there, you need to have a crèche. Now they are saying 50 employees.
Yeah.
There is a huge change because it's not about the women alone. Even a men, if they want to come to the workplace, if they want to bring their child, and they should be off allowed, and the crèche should be available so that the gender neutrality is still emphasized. Not only that, you are talking about some companies cannot provide crèche facility. In such a case, crèche allowance they provide. Crèche allowance not only for ladies. Even if a gen, if he is having a child, and the crèche allowance, they are eligible. If you are not able to, you need to pay for the, even for the gens also, the crèche allowance. So it brings the distribution of the handling the children, handling the child. Also, it's actually legally getting distributed there. So these are all the very good provisions, I would say, in terms of the woman empowerment in the new labor codes.
I just want to add there, Sheetal, it's one is this empowerment by the under the garb or under the pretext of protecting women late hours and all. I think somewhere we're depriving the woman of a lot of opportunities. And like Dr. Indra said, that is not being thrown out. If you're willing and you want to work and you want to have, it's almost like the equal opportunities available, which is to my mind is a big, big thing in a nation building.
Absolutely. You've hit the nail on the target, nation building. You need to be inclusive, equal opportunity. You gave us another phrase that's very important. And these are positive shifts in the right direction to a brighter India. But you know, speaking of this democratization of how things are done, another aspect, right? And this is, I want to focus a few questions for our institutional, you know, entities who are interested in the conversation we're having today. How can this, Prasad, this digital, unified digital compliance framework democratize growth? Because that's another important thing. In a way that smaller companies are scale as quickly as, you know, some of the larger ones are doing. They should not get left out of the, just as women, we were talking about inclusion with respect to women and other genders. I'm sure the same applies to smaller companies vis-a-vis larger ones, right?
While we take the smaller companies, I think Sheetal will be very unfair on me because we interact with a lot of CHROs. There's some points which is for both, for small and large. I'll just cover that in, say, 30 seconds. So the CHROs are saying, please give me clarity on multi-state applicability. Please give me clarity on more clarity on wage definition, state versus central. Please help us more clarity on fixed term and consultant treatment and overtime for knowledge workers. So these are four things which has come out from there. Now just imagine even the large companies are worried about this. The smaller companies will not have a clue much on that. So I think what we see it is happening. Larger companies are tech donors. They hired some big consultants, and getting some knowledge. As bodies like NHRD, I think have the obligation of getting those knowledge out, giving to the smaller players, and putting them in comfort. Okay, so I think what will happen when such laws come? Either people completely get scared or avoid, start defaulting. And I think for India to grow, we can't afford both. We need compliance, but fearless compliance or adherence to thing. The smaller companies, I think we are also playing a part. But I think, as you're aware, we're coming with the book along with NHRD of do's, don'ts, trying to bring some of those advices we're getting from larger player as a input to the smaller players. So I'm sure all of us have to some role to play to make this a success.
Democratization of the information, that is something that you're clearly all these endeavors that you've described are going to help. And to that extent, the smaller entities will also have a equal opportunity at the kind of growth that the bigger ones will see. Now, you know, to come to you, Dr. Inbaraj, labor reform is often, there's a temptation to often view it through a legal lens. But then a true thought leader, NHRDN, for example, sees it through a human resource development lens. So how do these codes specifically improve the dignity of labor and social security, ensuring that our economic growth is not just, you know, fast and rapid and has a force multiplier effect, but also socially sustainable? Because dignity, even when you talk about CSR, it's not just about access to opportunity. It's about the dignity with which you give access to employee that actually is sustainable, right? So your views would be great.
Okay. See, if you look at the old laws, labor laws, it was actually protecting only the 10% of the organized workforce. So that means 90% of workforce in India did not have a legal protection before this new labor code. Today, labor code, if you look at it, if a housemaid is there, for them, minimum wages is applicable. And a housemaid, to that extent, law is extended. It's from 10% to it's becoming 100%. If a housemaid is at working and there is no, whatever wages the house owner and the maid is agreeing for that, they can pay for that. There is no standards for that. Today, the standard starts from there. So any type of employment, if there is an employment, the standard minimum wages comes into the place. And there is no discretion for the employer to decide on that. Second part of it, even there is a huge disparity between the states to fixing the minimum wages. For example, if you look at Rajasthan, is a very, very low, starting from 8,000 onwards there. There are states giving actually 20 places of the minimum wages. What central government is going to do, they are going to fix the floor minimum wages. The floor minimum wages is going to be, for example, 15,000. No state government can fix the minimum wages lesser than that. That will bring a commonality in that, number one. And no more about coming back to the employment in the organization, contract laborers look at it, housekeepings and their service product. They don't have any kind of a letter or an approval that they are employed. And, they go for a loan, get that. Today, every employer is expected, 10 or more employees if they are having, they must issue an appointment letter.
Right.
Everybody in the organization having 10 or more, you must issue a standard appointment letter. That will help them to go for a loan application, their social life standard, everything, it will come into the place, number one. Coming to the gig workers, so far the biggest challenge of the gig worker is, who is their employer? Hmm. Because basically, employer is determined who is going to make a payment. As far as gig worker Ola, Ola may also pay, sometimes Ola, Uber, we also pay in that as a customer. Then who is an employer? So now government is bringing a scheme in such a way, these gig workers also, they are going to create a fund for a ESI, like a state insurance kind of a thing. And they are going to create a kind of provident fund provisions. So these provisions will give a complete provision for them even when they are not able to go for a work. That is going to change because I have a confidence. Tomorrow some fund is there in future when I'm a sick or I'm going to retire. Even for a self-employed employees. So these kind of provisions are in place. The schemes are yet to be worked out, but provision is available under this new code. So protecting the dignity of the labor work system across India, that's a major change, especially the code on wages is going to apply all employment, irrespective of number of people, starting from housemaid, agriculture, every sector. And look at that. You're talking about minimum wages. Minimum wages today in India, it is applicable only today, not today, till the new code in come in place. Only 3% of workforce in India were covered by the minimum wages.
Right.
Today, it's going to become 100%.
Hmm.
Look at the change is going to happen in place. This is what's going to make a change. So floor wages will give an increase on that. Again, above that, minimum wages will come to the next level, over and above that. So their standard of living itself is going to change. And loading of more components into the allowances are also going to come down so that the employee is going to really get the benefit at the end of the day in their hand. So the employees are going to become realization of the employees, just not employees, just not a labor. They are also value creators for the organization.
Hmm.
They are not just an employee. So that is actually concept is brought in here. And also the whims and fancies, we cannot use the contract laborers. Earlier, no, any type of employment, no, you can engage the contract laborers. Now they are saying if it is a core job, you are intended to construct the business for that purpose, then you can't engage the contract labor on that core jobs.
Okay.
So they are also wanting to eliminate the contract labor system in place over a period of time, but not stopping immediately. There are a few exceptions are there. What they are saying is engage contract labor only in the allied services that you don't require. And also fixed term employees, if you look at it, they don't have, for example, if I'm employed for 2 years, after that, what is going to happen for me?
Mm.
What they are saying is if you are engaging somebody fixed term, give a special provision of gratuity even if they do it for 1 year.
Right.
There is an additional benefit coming in because you are going to engage in a short term. They get into the uncertainty in life. So give them an additional benefit of gratuity even for 1 year. So these kind of changes are going to change the dignity, improve the dignity of the laborers moving forward.
Absolutely. Very important aspect of the entire conversation, because any sort of social change can only be, I think, realized in many ways with dignity built into the measures or the steps that are taken to it. Now, what role? Here's where we whip out our crystal balls, try to imagine the future, create the future that we want to want the upcoming generations to inherit from us. So what role do you see the HR community, fraternity really play in, say, the immediate next 12 months to ensure that implementation of the codes is seamless and leads to an increase in this ease of living for employees? And Prasad, I'll ask you to open this one.
See, I think one thing, while we covered all the merits of it, we also have to be empathizing or sympathizing with the industry and CHR is representing the increase in the wage bill. Good part is they are all okay with it. Now they are going to find ways to optimize. So there, like I know one company who said their bill is going to increase by 1,100 crores. Okay. And which is a good amount, but they are not resisting that. So I think they're now looking at creating a financial first step. There are five steps. First step is to say, how do I give financial modeling and financial provisioning? How do I do a scenario modeling and a financial modeling to ensure how is it going to impact business? What are the things I will do other than this? Second, most important is how do I do the employee communication strategy? We all know today, today's employees are interested in take home. Go and tell them that your PF is gratuities increase and all those things may not be good. So it might demoralize them. So how do you craft the communication right way is very important. Third is to engage some sort of third party consultants to get those input. They also now revisiting the workforce architecture, like Dr. Indraj was saying, what is the mix of consultants on role, off role? I think companies are started looking at a right mix because they have to do it right and largely definitely strengthen their digital readiness. How do I reinforce my HRMS platform or payroll platform able to even tell me whether I'm doing right? What are the ways of making improved productivity? And like I said, people are looking at out commission. People are looking for outcomes. They're ready to do this extra mile, but how outcomes of the company, whether it's top line, EBITDA margins, diversity, how do I do? So I think companies are now looking ahead with some help, clarity from the government to do a reformative out commission.
Right. Understood. Ian, what about you, Dr. Inbaraj?
Yeah. See, one thing we need to understand, no employer wants to consciously violate the law. Every employer wants to comply that. HR should play a very, very neutral, objective bridge between the employer and the new code implementation process. As Mr. Prasad has rightly pointed out, number one, knowing the changes is most important. Because majority of labor laws, even HR, I handle sessions across India, I could see that majority of places, 80% of HR itself thinking that it is yet to be implemented. They should realize that labor code has been already implemented from 21st November onwards, number one. Number two, only certain provisions which requires the rules to become operative, you have to wait for it. Otherwise, 70% of the provisions are self-operative. Doesn't require a rules to come in place. So they have to start knowing which are all the provisions to be implemented now, which provisions can wait for the rules to come in place. That's the first step. Second is, calculate the cost impact. See, business is meant for always cost. So tell them in advance for them to predict and provision in the process, which items, line items need to have a financial provisions, how it is going to impact the business, what kind of legal requirements to be done, prepare a checklist and give it to them, present to the leadership, get the concurrence, buy-in among all, and creating that. These two things actually will make that transition of this new process, because any change is difficult. And moreover, law is no interpretation changes from person to person. And also it changes from time to time. So in that context, what actually the immediate changes, applying the expert knowledge into the process, wherever required, incorporating the expert knowledge and creating a roadmap for the next 1 year, what are we going to do? That's the first stage they should start in for making the life of the employees easy as well as, because there are both the sides, the objections are there actually. Making clarity, this is the law. You don't have an option to just wait and watch.
Correct.
It has to be implemented from 21st November. It has to be implemented irrespective of your practical constraint.
Correct.
So start working towards the journey. Like, you know, 2 days you have to settle the left employees. Within 2 days, you have to finalize, settle the full and final settlement. Practically, there are challenges. But create a system. Use the digitization process. and make sure that, no, you are complying with that. You can't have an excuse that, no, I don't have a time, that we will not be implementing all. It has to be starting from 21st November. We should start implement the self-operative provisions.
I just want to add here, rightly said, from a transparency perspective. In fact, as Zingacha, what we have done, we have created a used AI quickly to create with a simulator. Each company just puts in the register and comes to the, which are the areas impact going to have impact. One, we have launched something called zero touch payroll. We are eliminating the need to process payroll. It happens on a real time, on a daily basis. That means you are knowing your gratuity and superannuation and leave encashment on a daily basis. Now, this removes a fear from the HR also. So we are empowering HR people to become the rightly, as Dr. Indra said, be the right advisor to the management and also tell where are we now can improve. What are the areas we can attack? And not only giving them news saying, I'm going to increase it by a couple of crores, but also coming out saying how we can improve the productivity. So I think it's a game of intention and technology put together, intention and innovations. I think we'll see a great, industrial, almost like a revolution coming from a workforce management.
Intention is really, I think, a key over here. You've hit the nail on the target. And that really requires a certain mindset shift, right? So to all the practitioners, HR practitioners who are listening in, what is that mindset shift that we need to lead with within the organization if we are to align to the larger goal? And I, you know, this is something that everyone has sort of glossed over, but in some time, we are going to be a 100-year-old independent company. India at 2047 is a thing, and it's a reality. It's coming soon for us. So what's that mindset shift according to you, Dr. Indraj, and then I'll come to you, Prasad.
So it's a good question. As I started in the beginning, compliance should become the culture of the organization. For example, if you're a driver in a car, who's actually supposed to comply with the rules of the traffic? It's the driver who's driving. It is a performer who's doing the job. It's not that police man's job to come and imply that. So similarly, HR and compliance, people are only a custodian of the compliance. But person, business leaders, operation leaders, they should realize that's the job of HR to make them to realize this is a job of a performer. If I do this job, in my job, there is no non-compliance. If I engage so many people in my scope of work, no employees are actually not having covered under the labor law requirements. So I would say that it should build us in the organization. Culture of compliance should come in place. That will give an easy way of transitioning. So most importantly, HR should know, then educate the business leaders, build the culture of compliance in the organization. Then it is easy for you to move in the direction.
I want to change that question a little bit for you, Prasad, because, you know, we have a founder, someone who is a specialist in the space of HR tech. And I'm quite certain that a lot of people who were in whose heads ideas are bubbling as we speak, you know, startups and innovators. And as we move towards this unified compliance era that, you know, Dr. Indraj just painted a picture for us of, what are the kind of tools that they could think of building for this One India, One Compliance thought shift that we are moving towards?
I think one is to say they should have one unified system, whether it's for on role, off roles. They should have a tool which that you are compliant. You know, like Dr. Indra said, most of the founders or entrepreneurs or business houses want to be compliant. And today's a time where you have made all those rules come to four rules. So what better time than to comply? So my intention is find out the best innovative ways of creating a unified tool for doing that. And just to say, my message is growth, and you saw on my screen, growth without HR is there, without human resource, growth for any company is not going to be there. So I don't see this as a compliance-led initiative. It is a growth mindset. And I would suggest all of our, I think fortunately, are embracing the growth with the HR part of it. And I would see a great, over the next couple of quarters, thanks to all the initiatives, like including NHRD, I think there will be a lot of transparency, a lot of vibrancy coming up, and people will be happy that we have gone into this regime. Yeah, and as technology providers or working with industry leaders, including advisors, I think we are keen to play a vital role in making this happen.
Wonderful, you know. Okay. Those are very, very powerful words, final kind of words. But I've got one light question for the both of you. This is completely different, requires a little bit of out-of-box thinking. I'm actually joking. But by now, I think most people have got the sense that I certainly as a podcaster have of you, Dr. N. Baraj, as the master of compliance on this podcast. And Prasad, you as a master of tech. So here's a poser. In this new era of new labor codes, what's going to be more important for an HR leader? An additional degree in law or an additional degree in data science or AI or tech or something?
Okay. So if you ask me, definitely additional degree in law is not essential. It's a preferred one. But what I would say is getting an intensive knowledge expertise in this, because law is covering the wide spectrum of law, law degree as such. It covers around 40, 50 laws, not only 40, more than that, 3 years degree. But intensive knowledge on this 29 labor laws. Having no NHRD always conducts the certification program in labor laws. So those kind of programs, getting the expertise on the intents about it more than enough and taking it to letter and spirit. Because many times what happens, HR should build the courage to go and tell the business, this is the legal requirement, whether we like it or not, it is to be part of our process. So employer also need it. But how you put up to the employer to make sure that business continuity is also there, and also compliance in place. That bridging gap is the job of role of HR. So not necessary to go for an exclusive degree on that, for a HR law degree as such to go into that, but having an expertise, building expertise, going through that. One more thing I want to say that in the year 1990s, when the new era started, globalization, especially the IT industry has come in, many people in the industry world, especially HR, also thought labor laws is not applicable to IT industries, IT business. It is a completely false assumption. All labor laws are applicable to everybody, every industrial establishment, every industries. All the labor laws are applicable. Maybe, for example, factory provision alone may not be applicable for IT. That's all. So knowing that, so breaking the myth now, because I know that many MBA degrees nowadays, they don't have a labor law subject at all. Not even a single subject. They don't have an MBA. That has to come in place. And more, it's going to become a mandatory recognition of unions. So HR needs to develop IR skills now, industrial relations skills. Because of democratization in the industry, our government is thinking that labor law is made in such a way that recognition of industry union is mandatory now. So in that way, how the HR is going to build that knowledge, which is not there almost 20, 30 years, that IR knowledge is lost, I would say that. It was there in the 90s, then the 2000 onwards, 25, now I would say that IR skills becoming very rare. Building that competency, including in the IT sector, including in service sector, of IR knowledge, employee relations knowledge, building that reputation is going to be more important. That is what HR needs to do. At the end, I want to say one point. If there is a good relationship, though there is no need of law. Mm. There is a bad relationship, no law will help you.
Correct. Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. You know, I'm going to turn it around for you. It's given me an idea because suddenly Dr. N. Baraj has given us some course study material for the rest of the quarter, I think. Prasad, what are the skills most important if you have to wrap our heads around making a success out of the implementation?
I think the solutions will come, like I said, if you have the intentions to make it happen. There's no dearth of knowledge like people like Dr. N. Baraj or technology players. I think you should just start with the intention. Like I said, if you have the right chemistry for the entire workforce, I'm saying commerce will come. But the chemistry has to start before commerce. Yeah. If you look only from the commerce perspective and not worry about the workforce, I think it is not a long-lasting relationship. So for us, I think have the right intention, build the chemistry with the entire workforce or the ecosystem, commerce will come.
We are ending on a perfect note over here. Intention, chemistry. We are talking about upskilling ourselves in some critical core areas. So instead of just talking about the new labor codes, we've also spoken about how we need to upskill ourselves to take on a new future, which includes everything. It includes a coming together of technology, of intention and purpose, and also employee welfare. And by employee, I'm using a very loose definition of the word. Anyone who's indeed part of the workforce, organized, unorganized. It's been, I think, a brilliant start to this thinking that needs to take different routes. And I hope our listeners, viewers, go away from this and write back to both of you. Prasad and Dr. N. Baraj, your inbox should be flooded with queries. You know, how do I do this? How do I do that? And if we've done that, then I think we've been successful on the podcast. But thank you so much, both of you, for joining us today.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much. Thank you for the wonderful session. Thank you, Sital. Thank you, Prasad. Thank you, NHRD.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much.
This episode is brought to you by Zing HR. Listening to the NHRD podcast. NHRD, a national HRD network, India's largest network for HR professionals.